Welcome to Tactical Permaculture. I've worked on projects ranging from the poorest to richest clients, from inner cities to suburbs to farmlands to remote wilderness, from the eco-war front lines to celebrity backyards. In over 25 years of service to the earth and the community of life, I've learned that in the fight for sustainable survival, growing is half the battle. Please go to tacticalpermaculture.com to read my blog, watch my videos, view my photos, access web applications, and click on the join membership link to access exclusive features. March 29th, 2024, episode number 122. A thought came to me recently as I have been preparing for my fourth summer here in the desert. And the thought was that I'm staring down the barrel of the sun. So a bit of a play on words. But it definitely feels no joke, life and death, knowing that the debilitating and crazy-making nonstop hell of extreme heat is not too far away, and the beginnings of it during the peak hours, mainly between about 2 and 4 o'clock, is when, for some reason, I don't know why, I'd have to do more research. I don't know why the midday sun, where it's directly overhead, which is a little earlier, why that would not be the hottest point of the day, but it's actually a little bit later. I would assume it's some kind of compounding effect, but I'm not an expert on it. I just have to adapt to it. And it's interesting that I guess technically the temperatures, at least the global average temperature, seems to be on a, I'm assuming that it is. I know last year was record breaking average global temperature. That obviously they average that out, however, over space and time. But for me, I'm still trying to understand the ratio of my being degraded by exposure to the sun continually over the years, so that my sun tolerance, if you will, is not increasing, but it's decreasing. It's a sort of a paradox that certain things you develop a tolerance to over time so that you're less affected by it and you're more adapted and more acclimatized. And then there seems to be certain things where you would hope that would be happening, but actually it's so potentially damaging or so stressful on the body that that really it's like it knocks you out so bad that you're just getting weaker and weaker no matter what, because it's just too much exposure. And I think it's some kind of combination of those factors to where I feel like, I don't want to say it's a losing battle, but I'll say I feel like I'm losing the battle. And I cannot afford at this time to make multi-thousand dollar, even into the tens of thousands of dollars of infrastructure builds that would give me the ability to keep at least nighttime body temperature below, at least nighttime ambient temperature surrounding me, have that be at a maximum of 85 degrees so that I could sleep properly. But the thing that, I mean, being unable to move, being immobilized during the most of the hours of the day, having a little bit of mobility, a couple hours before the sun comes up, a couple hours after, or as it's going down, but it's your circadian rhythms kick in the dark. I'm not cheating that with a bunch of artificial lighting. So the hardest part really of surviving the heat, I talked about this before, for me, it's the torture of not being able to sleep and waking up constantly, and what your body does these really weird things to try to shed heat in the night. And it just, even if you do, when you can fall into a technical sleeping state, it's a very shallow sleep, and it seems like I never get hardly any, and certainly nowhere near enough REM sleep. And that's what I dread the most. I mean, the things that I have the most, that feel the most, the most difficult to psychologically prepare for, is that sleeping factor. And unfortunately, yeah, in this all-consuming heat environment, the only options I really have, going from least to most expensive, or I'm going to start with the most expensive and go to the least expensive, because it's like the most ideal to the least ideal, the ideal to the real. So all things I've spoken about before, but the most, and Bill Mollison said this as well in one of the PDCs, the permaculture design courses, the official ones, while he was still alive, talking about desert cooling technologies that are ancient. And at one point he said they went over a whole list of things that you can do to engineer and design to drop cool air to lower points, to have water, or to have hot air cross water and have the water pull some of the heat out of the air. But after getting through a lot of the surface techniques, he eventually says, or you just go underground. That's what all the animals do. And I wish I could do that safely. I don't have the tribe to do the collective work to make it even possible by ancient means, and I don't have the funds to safely do it with the right equipment and the right air filtration, airflow, and security. It's obviously, one of my Green Beret mentors said, was very adamant against underground survival. And yeah, you could say the word bunker, but how about just naturally cooled underground shelter and just leave it at that? But tactically disadvantaged position, he said, I could waste you if you're underground and I'm attacking you from above ground. It's totally disadvantageous position from a tactical perspective. And I'm going to take his word for that. I suppose the only way it makes sense to be underground in a tactical position is if no one knows where you are. But if you're in a very obvious position like I am, anybody wants to mess with me for any reason, I'm basically, I'm trapped. And I'm, my response time without a lot of robotic or human personnel to defend on the surface. Someone's got to be on the surface. Yeah, I guess when the robots are cheap enough, I can have robot security and then I can be underground. But again, that's a lot of money. So there's no way. The price tag on even the smallest units is too much, let alone the cost of installation, and let alone that sort of breaking my code of low visibility, trying to not attract a lot of attention, so just so that I can be left alone, really. Well, you start building it, doing any kind of construction at that scale, even if technically it's possible that I wouldn't need to be permitted, it's still gonna make people wonder if you have permits, and that's gonna cause entanglement that I don't want, I don't need. I'm doing fine with staying here, not leaving. Technically, yeah, I can afford to get all my paperwork straight and pay everything. I'm not delinquent on any fees or anything, but it's just the bleeding if I'm not going out in the world to make money to pay for the cost of being able to go out in the world, I'm trying to just stay at break even after doing a sub $5,000 tax return last year. That was only possible because I wasn't running around buying expensive inflated food off the shelf, and I wasn't paying for gas and insurance and registration and smog. In terms of the relationship with the state and all of its ways to extract your wealth, whether you're doing right or doing wrong, I've tried to minimize that, all of that. But the trade-off is because it would cost tens of thousands of dollars, many tens of thousands of dollars, just to jump through all the hoops to be able to have a mailbox, even though there's no reason why I don't have one. I mean, there's no technical reason why, even if there was a fee, just give me a mailbox at the road, I'll pay for it, and that's cool. But no, it doesn't work that way. You have to go through all of the multi-tens of thousands of dollars of infrastructure, compliant infrastructure build-outs that would give you the legal freedom to have a mailbox. So without that, and without leaving, I'm blessed to be able to pay my bills without, in a paperless manner, and I'm kind of glad that things have gone in that direction. Pretty much I can manage almost all of my affairs paperless. So if my mailbox eventually, they say, hey, you got to come get this because it's filling up, if they're as cool as they've been in the past at other places I've lived and had mailboxes, I'll just be able to say to them, can I'll pay the fee for you to do what you would do to scan them and email them to me, and then can I ask you that you just throw out whatever I don't need? And they've done that before. They've gone through it and told me whether or not I had something that I was waiting for, therefore I could minimize the trips and only go. But at this point, my mobility is disabled. If I want to leave here, I can't drive out of here. I have to get a ride out of here, or I have to bike out of here, which would be a very dangerous proposition, not only because of the heat for most of the year, but just the politics of leaving here and what I have to get through. I'm in what I consider to be a very rare space where it's not safe because it's a high property value neighborhood. It's very Wild West, so it's only safe because the bad guys, the tweakers, the gangsters, the people who violently disagree with my politics, they just are far enough away, and most of them would drop dead like zombies most of them would drop dead in the heat for 3 to 4 months out of the year. So that's one dimension of safety where the sun is on my side, and they would be staring down the barrel of the sun more than me. But the other dimension is that those rest of the months of the year where it's cool enough, I've got pretty much no tactical allies and no defenses other than my own alertness and my own modest weaponry. All legal, of course, and all deployed potentially in only the most perfect self-defense scenarios, legally speaking. But it's a harrowing experience to be remote and to be cut off from everything, but that's everything but the internet. That's why you're hearing from me still. But this, that was a whole kind of side note on just, you get the reason, main reason I don't want to get caught up in anything with the system is that mainly that forces you to be a slave to to your address's mailbox or your P.O. box because of what's called service of process, which is if they want to drag you into court proceedings, or they want to fine you and keep you on a schedule of paying fines, or they want to investigate you and interrogate you and audit you or whatever. Yeah, I mean, forget about living your off-grid, ancient future, Wild West fantasy if you get a tax audit of all things, and therefore you're basically, you're going to be sleeping on the sidewalk in front of your P.O. box in order to satisfy all of the requests by mail. And if you're delinquent on them, God help you. So for all I know, there's all kinds of service of process that I've never received, and I've just got a bunch of bench warrants and fines piling up. But that's why I try to stay compliant, stay out of trouble. I'm certainly not hoping to not be a nuisance to anyone anymore, if I ever was. I suppose when I was vehicle dwelling on the streets, I was compliant with the laws. I even had maps of where it was legal to sleep in your vehicle, which they did this whole zoning thing in LA where they said, city council said, people living in RVs on the side of the road, homeless people, whatever, car dwellers. Car dwellers have less rights than carless tent campers who pretty much can en masse, and bless them for it. I mean, I've been there. I've lived on the street without a car countless nights earlier in my life. I'm glad to say that I've had the last several years before being on the land, I was able to sleep in my car and sleep in a truck and get away with it. And I wasn't making a lot of noise or causing a fuss, so luckily I never got cited for vehicle dwelling, even though I was, and I just knew and found places to be where no one will be bothered by me, and that was a risk trade-off as well, as far as being vulnerable. But it's another summer coming up, and that sort of caps it off. If I was going to seize the opportunity to get vehicles, one or more of them sort of roadworthy again in terms of the legality of it, that window of opportunity is closing rapidly. And if I was going to try to bike out of here, that window of opportunity is closing as well, because once it's no ins and outs after about mid-June, from mid-June all the way to mid-October. It's not just a 3-month summer, it's a 4-month summer is what I've really determined and realized. So between that period of time, those months, there's really no escape unless it's in a medevac of some kind, which I'm obviously, if I'm trying to conserve my financial resources, not trying to be anyone else's problem, and certainly not a medical problem. That makes another dimension of it being harrowing, because you step on something sharp, or you snag something, or you get some kind of food poisoning, or I'm not worried too much about viral infections, but bacterial infections for sure. So yeah, I wish this was a well-funded survival experiment where I just yell cut and then a medic comes, or I yell cut and then the deli tray arrives or whatever, you know. Oh man, on the spectrum of survival shows, apparently there are some that are far more realistic about being cut off from everything, and then ones that are far less realistic. It's pretty much all simulated, and everything that they could ever want is at their fingertips, just on the other side of the camera. The catering table with everything, all the food you can imagine, and then air conditioning and all that. So, no, this is the real thing, and there's nothing. I mean, I've had a couple of friends kind of make some donations to show support, but I'm not funded. And people have said to me, why don't you use the web, the plat- web the crowdfunding platforms, and just I'm not popular enough intrinsically. I'm not trying to be pessimistic, but I'm not already popular enough to where it would be a likely success. And I don't, the art and the act and the life of survival and the priorities I have with the time that I can be online, I don't have the stomach for comments and replies. And even if they're not trolls and they're not know-it-all one-upmanship kind of sound like coming across ostensibly as wanting to be helpful, but really it's about, oh, you're doing it the wrong way, or you should be doing this. Just unsolicited advice. You know, I'm doing what I can. And the advice that I would like to have is from people who are not keyboard warriors or armchair experts, but people who are in the same boat, really, and are trying to do the same things. And maybe we can talk shop and be friends. You know, that's my goal. That's why I'm doing the membership site and really minimizing the attack surface of social media to nothing, so that I don't have randos affecting my life. Like, why would I want anyone who isn't vetted to have any effect on my life whatsoever? But the paradox is, I do have to publish in order to find those people. So I've taken measures like disabling comment features and whatnot. But long story short with that, it's capital intensive, even at the micro scale, for me to maintain a normal relationship with the modern world. I have to have this very, it's like Walden Pond, but far more sinister. So I get some of the effects that you're looking for to go back to the land, but at a cost to my health, a cost to my safety, a cost to my sanity. And it's worse than cabin fever. It's in the best case scenario would be like the romanticism of Walden Pond. The worst, it's more like Evil Dead. You're trapped and get the worst of what's possible. So yeah, I got to be careful, got to be safe, got to plan around things. So I did just have that. I did just have one of my essentially two deliveries of supplies a year. I've got it figured out so that I have supplies delivered twice a year, and then I'm able to consume resources for 6 months. And then basically have about 3 to 6 months in reserve and just keep rotating through it, so I never end up anywhere near zero, which would force me out of my position, which if that were to happen and land on me in the middle of summer, then it would be game over. Either I allow myself to starve to death, or it's not even safe to have anybody come out here. I don't want to ask anyone to come out here when the temperatures are that deadly. And once you're locked into this place and those temperatures are as high as they are 24/7, you don't want to venture off. You don't want to be out with the scorpions in a state of a sun drunk stupor that lasts for several months straight. It's just too dangerous. So I'm trying to really look at the lessons learned. And if the temperature has gotten worse and my intrinsic natural ability to tolerate it and the wear and tear on my body and my sanity has gotten worse, and yet I have lived and learned and developed strategies to mitigate it, but those strategies to mitigate it are not keeping pace with the wear and tear. But this summer I have a couple of modifications to and evolutions of what I've been developing over the past few years. And I feel like I have hope and optimism for being able to maybe drop the temperature extremes by 5 to 10 degrees, which doesn't sound like much, isn't usually that much of a big deal, but it is a big deal it's a big deal for me. And even if I can only achieve that during parts of the day, anything that lessens the severity for any amount of time, that relief goes a long way for morale and for just allowing the slightest bit of the body to be able to do what it wants to do, which is function at an optimal temperature to process all the things it has to process. It's almost like being stressed all the time and your body's not growing, it's not detoxing, it's not breaking things down, so you have health problems. Robert Sapolsky was the first scientist, I believe, to prove the correlation between stress and disease. And that was mainly a psychological stress in this baboon troop that he studied. Very interesting study. So this is the stress of heat illness, chronic heat illness for over the course of several months in the year. So anything that makes the slightest bit of relief, even Bill Mollison said, doesn't have to be cool. It's all relative. If you can do something to lower the temperature, then that, even if the temperature is way above what you would normally find to be comfortable, it's almost like, to paraphrase, he's basically saying the perception of being less hot is actually profound enough that it doesn't have to be cool. That's how I would rephrase it, since I can't remember the exact quote, but that's the sentiment, and I totally feel that. So where I left off last year was wrapping cloth around my head and my neck and using computer fans in a clever manner that just sort of evolved kind of out of nowhere. I discovered it. It's just partially the concept of a swamp cooler, but a way more efficient manner. And what Paul Wheaton would say about heating, he said, heat the person, don't heat the room. There's too much energy wasted in a bunch of air that you don't have come to contact with. You know, I've been in scenarios where it was a debilitating financial deal breaker to try to use normal ways of heating a house, because then you realize tiny homes make a lot of sense, because if you were going to heat the air or cool the air, the larger area that you're dwelling in, the more absurdly, ridiculously expensive it is to try to climate control large amount of space. So best thing you can do if you're on a budget or you trying to be minimalistic to live simply so that others may simply live kind of thing, then it makes sense to spot treat where you need, and not even just your whole body, but where your blood is. I mean, that's why you wear socks and a hat. There's parts of your body that release less heat and parts that release more. So you cover those. And that's, I mean, what's great about the winter, I never was a fan of the cold. I was always very weak-minded when it came to surviving the cold. But over this last winter, a real change has happened where I have enough layers that I can pretty much maintain a very comfortable body temperature. The thing that will rob me of that is just really cold wind chill. But in terms of the coldest temperatures, even freezing temperatures, I can buffer that just by layering up. And yeah, it's amazing how well that works to have this optimum range. But you don't have that luxury. The heat you can't hide from. You can't. There's the only thing that you can do to somewhat approximate that effect is to use water. But that only works if the humidity is low enough where you are for the air to absorb the water off your skin, thus create an evaporative cooling effect on the surface of the skin. I mean, that's why you sweat. But that's why people die in humid areas in the heat, because the temperature or the your body's natural ability to use water to cool you down, and then if you use misting or dousing or dunking in water to try to, for me, the use of that technique allows me to preserve more water internally. If I can spray myself down with the mist, then I don't have to lose the electrolytes and the water and with sweat. But now I'm spending water. This year, getting into now I'm going to get into the strategies across that continuum of price. Is that so? Underground shelter is the most ideal financially, legally. Not something that's feasible at this time. So maybe in the future, but I'm not going to hold my breath. And then the next thing from that would be putting in thousands of dollars, but still thousands of dollars to have enough, a big enough battery bank and enough solar power to be able to power an AC type of unit that could work to just cool a very small area. But sadly, they're still so energy inefficient. There hasn't been, to my knowledge, any major breakthrough in the energy efficiency of cooling air, which you can do it off grid. I've seen the specs. I've seen people do it, you would have to have a lot more money than I have to work with at this point in order to come close to that. And if you spend a lot of money and it doesn't work well enough, or it can't go 24/7. Yeah, it might add a little bit, but yeah, I'm doing it very piecemeal as I can liquidate some assets without totally destroying my potential for wealth over the course of the rest of my lifetime. I don't want to. Let's just say I had some gold. It's not gold, but let's say I had some gold and I could sell some of it. Do I want to sell it all at once and just that's what I have to live with for the rest of my life? Or otherwise I got to go back to work? Or do I want to sell as little as I can over as long of a period of time as I can, which means grinding down and really being forced to improvise? So to me, that's really the greatest value of being in this financial circumstance where I'm financially free, but only if I'm extremely frugal. I will not be financially free if I spend all my minimal micro fortune, I spend all of that capital to have something, but then I have to leave that something to go back to work. I'm still trying to get to a point where my documenting of this experiment sort of leads to enough remote support that can be the job. That doing permaculture survival in the desert, it's not just my occupation because it's what occupies my time, but it's what people give a couple bucks a month or whatever they can just to see me stay alive and make cool stuff and entertain them and educate them. Like that's the dream, because there are people out there doing it and they're making a killing doing it, and it's absurd, obscene how much money can be made. But I'm kind of, I don't know what I got to do to be cool enough or to, you know, not just be popular as a personality, but I'm cutting off some of that potential by not doing a lot of FaceTime in front of the camera, not being on certain platforms, and not trying to have a lot of engagement. That those are the things that make people more engaged, is the tools of engagement. It's obvious, but I'm going to see how far I can go without, to me, that's kind of selling out. I'm willing to communicate, but again, I don't want, the signal to noise ratio has got to be pure signal. I can't waste any time on noise, and that's, unfortunately, it's not free to be on a platform that eats up all your time and destroys your peace because of all the trolling. And I don't even want to see people's usernames. They're so crude and vulgar and base and disgusting and offensive and nauseating. I mean, that's not for everybody. Certainly people who I want to appeal to are people who are going to have preppers, survivalists, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, it's their name, and that's all cool. But in the process of getting, I don't want to sign onto a platform and then just be spammed by a bunch of disgusting, demoralizing, not even just bad advertising and spam, but all of the crudity and all of the immaturity of people, young and old, who just have no taste and no decency anymore. I mean, it says a lot for me to be offended by anything, for me, because of my background, where I come from, where it was like the currency of the subculture that I came from was indecency and not cruelty, but certainly vulgarity and that anything goes. But now I just don't have the stomach for it. So I'm not trying to be depressing here. I'm just assessing my options. And if it's a trickle of support from the outside, because I don't want to jump through all the hoops and be a court jester online and be steeped in that mentality, because I'm doing all this because I enjoy my freedom and I enjoy my peace. I'm not gonna destroy my risk destroying my freedom, risk destroying my peace, in order to sort of recapitalize or to take out a second mortgage with the cost of it being my peace of mind. That's why it's great to have filters on the internet where you can have private relationships with people. I don't want to have public conversations. I don't want to operate in that manner. So with the trickle of support as it is now, and I'm going to get to this. This is going to be the kind of the grand finale of this episode is my strategy that I'm coming up with for that. Not just a strategy to survive the heat, but a strategy to turn the trickle of support into at least a bit of a stream. But that middle option of doing some kind of above ground solar powered AC system, that's just not as expensive, but still too expensive. And I've made some efforts I did a lot of work, I mean, an insane amount of work, to build out an earth tube cooling system, only to find out that I would have to spend, I could put that in for a couple $100, is almost free to put in the tubing to dig. I just had to do the work to dig it down. And the idea is that air, you push air underground with fans through tubing or pipes buried at a depth and running for a length, that the air from the surface that gets pushed through it dissipates the heat through that run of piping underground, and then wherever you pipe it to, you get a temperature as cool as the ground, as the subsoil, which is usually a constant year-round temperature that's very much a comfortable room temperature. Even so, buffering from extreme cold, buffering from extreme heat, if you can pipe that air in, then you have an optimal temperature. But then again, then that requires that you have a sealed, there's infrastructure costs that are beyond me at this point in order to retain that cool air. But the biggest problem, I would be able to do that just by layering fabric if I had to, which I do have, but I wouldn't. Yeah, I mean, if I needed to insulate that cool, there's ways I could do that without that much money. But the real bottleneck and deal breaker was that the fan power that I have is not sufficient. So it would take scaling up again of the solar system, even if it wasn't to power AC, to power fans, to push air that distance. They've got to be industrial fans, and they've got to be running at least all of the hours that the sun can power it. But in order to have the wattage for that, yeah, we need a lot more panels. I am gonna be working with a larger solar array this year than ever. But it's still, we'll see. Yeah, I'm gonna adapt the strategies I have so far, and I'll be doing episodes, obviously, about how I'm able to scale up the strategy that I've used, which was to use those computer fans. Yeah, the sort of MacGyvered swamp cooler kind of effect of, I kind of missed that point I was trying to make earlier about the adapted swamp cooler and spot treating the person, heat or cool the person, not the room kind of thing. And the way I was able to do that to really, really spot treat the cooling was to use metal dog bowls. When you think of a dog food bowl, it's just a thin stainless steel bowl, but larger than most cereal bowls. But I was able to take this pattern of taking one of those dog bowls, putting about a half inch to three quarter inch of water in the bottom, and then resting a computer fan. It would just sit and fit above the water at the top of the bowl. And that just a computer fan going with really small amount of 12 volt DC power, it would miraculously have some effect I can't even explain exactly what the physics are, what's going on there, but it is the idea of creating airflow, i.e. the fan. So it's pushing and moving air around the surface of the water. The water is, what's happening is the water is getting cooled because apparently the heat of the water is getting pushed out into the air that's moving above it. So the bottom of the metal bowl gets cold. So if I place that on the skin, I feel a bit of cooling, but that's not adequate. And I don't want to sit there with a cold metal, it's not even cold at that point, but a cool metal bowl on me. And then, I mean, I've tried it, it didn't do much, it wasn't that much of a help, it was kind of a nice thought. But what really worked was producing that quarter inch of cool water, and then several times, I mean, maybe 10 times throughout the day, dunking a wet strip of cloth, dunking it in, and then squeezing it out and having a cool, damp piece of cloth wrapping around my forehead and one around my neck so that my head is kept cool for important reasons, for safety, and my neck, which is the main blood vessels are going through. If I wanted to or if I needed to, I could extend that as I have before to the crotch and the elbow and the under armpits. Those are other major highways of blood vessels that if you spot treat cooling them with cool dampened rags, this is also something you learn in first aid techniques for treating heat illness, is to wrap cold water dunked towels or some linens of some kind in those places. So that is the ultimate spot treating for coolness. However, it's not a fashionable attire. I haven't built out a sort of outfit that works in that way. It's very much a laying flat and still, which you would, in order for you not to counteract those effects, you wouldn't want to be up and around moving anyway. But sometimes you have to. So no, if I have to get up and go outside in the sun and from one tiny point of shade to another, then yeah, I'm going to just keep doing that. But of course, it's so hot and it's so dry that those rags, they dry out relatively quickly. So you just have to keep doing it over and over and over again. But that's how I survived. And that's how I maintained slivers of frayed ends of sanity last summer. And, that's the sort of, the lowest cost way to manage and to survive out here. That's the third option, which is using the solar power that I have, which isn't much, but it's enough to keep tiny fans going all day, not all night, but all day at least. And it, really, the thing is, I mentioned this before, but if you haven't spent a lot of time in these searing temperatures, you might not know. You might say, "Oh, just why don't you just get normal fans?" Well, at a certain point, I'd say above 95 degrees is my metric that I've arrived at. Above 95 degrees, when you blow fans on yourself of that temperature, it just makes it worse, because it's like taking a giant blow dryer at the highest temperature, which is not comfortable after a while. And it's certainly not comfortable when the temperature is out here 125 degrees and then I'm using a fan to blow that right in my face. So I may as well, my lips are going to chap down and look like a prune in about 5 minutes. My eyes are going to be red and itchy, and I'm going to feel like I'm literally dying in hell. But so it does no good to have fans. The only way that fans become useful is if you have the water to expend to mist that air with some form of misting system, which, again, very low budget for me. I've done that this whole time with literally handheld spray bottles, because it allows me to, again, spot treat. But there was a strategy that I had where I tied a bed sheet above me, almost like a tapestry, and I had a larger fan blasting into that sheet, which was blocking the fan. It was blocking the fan air from directly hitting my skin, so it wasn't blasting me directly. It was hitting the fabric, and then I was laying under the fabric and just routinely every few minutes dampening it by spraying it with like firing rounds of water like a squirt gun at it from the spray bottle, and that would cool the air immediately around me. Again, I evolved from that because that was a big waste of water. It worked, but it was and it was more efficient than some things, but it was still, the amount of water I was consuming doing that was more than what I was comfortable spending in that way. It felt very inefficient. So again, being able to wrap discovering the ability to cool water with computer fans, obviously those are far less power hungry than the larger fan, more like a box fan is what I was using, and that was a lot of solar energy to spend and a lot of water wasted to cool air all around me and not just cool my blood. So it's great that I've evolved to a point of pretty much maximum efficiency. Computer fans rather than big fans, spot treating with dampened, cooled rags on to cool my blood, and that conserves water and it conserves energy, so that's great. Now what I do have this year, now that I'm on to the third option, which is as minimal amount of money as I can spend, so to have extra solar power this year, I'll be able to be less frugal about the power usage, and I also have a windfall or a rainfall of rainwater that I caught I didn't have before, and I was just depleting supplies of water that I didn't know if I'd be able to replace. The fact that I was able to prove to myself that I could capture a year's worth of water in a rainy season, which I've done, I'm pretty much beyond break even with my rainwater catchment, so I can be a little more daring with how much I spend. So now with more power and no fear of a power deficiency, and with lots more water, I'm going to experiment with seeing if I can at least cool more water, and perhaps cool more of an ambient range of air around me, not by spraying water into the air, which is the ultimate ideal, is to be able to afford to have those misting systems that people have for backyard parties and whatnot in the summer, or outdoor dance parties and whatnot, the misting systems where they've got generator power and IBC totes filled with water, and it's able to do this timed periodic every couple of minutes. It's gonna spray the mist, but that goes fast. The water goes fast, and the power to pump that and have enough pressure for the misting to occur If you don't have enough water pressure, you're going to have just dripping, and that does not achieve anywhere near the same effect. Has to be very aerosolized. Another factor is you aerosolize stored water, you're going to get Legionella, Legionnaire's disease from the Legionella bacteria if you're not purifying that water, which is another issue. So the water that I'm using to cool myself now, that runs through my water filtration system, but I wouldn't want to burn out those water filters at the rate that it would require in order to have large amounts of water to push through a misting system. So that's another kind of deal breaker in terms of efficiency, is if you are always on guard against the growth of Legionella in your stagnant water storage tankage, then in order to prevent, I mean, it would be far more intensive of a process to prevent it under these circumstances than to accept that there's a chance that it could always be there. So you just have to filter it with a strong filter or a really powerful filter. It would cost too much energy to boil it. I am not 100% sold that just allowing UV light to pass through it is going to be enough of a disinfectant. And I wouldn't want to be, I mean, I would be worried if I was to be bleaching it or disinfecting it by other means, that that's going to be misted and in my eyes, not my skin and whatnot. So trying to keep it minimal. Yeah, the considerations for that are, again, budgetary and just the scale and the efficiency of it. But I do believe at some point out here, that's going to be the way to do things. The least costly and the most efficient way, if I did want to like cool a classroom and have any kind of social activities, it's not much of a social activity where it's like, okay, everybody come out and hang out during the summer. We're all going to be disgustingly overheated and ill from the heat and barely alive. And we all have to lay still and probably barely even speak to each other, but we're going to be laid out like we're in hospital tents, field hospital tents, with barely cooled and rapidly drying wet rags around our head and neck. And that's going to be how we socialize. No, it's pretty, that only works if you're doing this monastic sabbatical the way I am as an individual. Although, who knows, maybe I can make a fortune selling that as some kind of detox or some kind of silent meditation. But I'm not trying to go there because I don't want the liability. And I don't really want a lot of people around. But to have any social interaction out here any time during those 4 months, that's going to be the way to do it. Not digging underground, not having solar-powered AC, but having the pumping power and the water and the biological filtration capacity to have misting happening, even if it's just for an hour a day. It's like, okay, maybe we are doing the silent meditation, heat torture meditation retreat, and then for an hour a day we can throw the mister on, feel comfortable about it being safe, and know that there's enough solar power to run it for part of the day, and enough water to not be worried about wasting water. I don't want to say wasting water. I want to say gifting it back to the atmosphere. Well, it will remain for an average of 5,000 years before the molecules ever reach the surface again. And at that point, only for a very brief number of hours, maybe days, maybe weeks, maybe months, but certainly not 5,000 years. So, yeah, we surrender water that we use. It doesn't die with us. It gets surrendered back into the water cycle. Eventually it'll make its way back up to the heavens. So that's kind of a cute thought, isn't it? The way we temporarily borrow heat, temporarily borrow water. It's very interesting, humbling. So that's kind of, yeah, where things are at. The thing that I will be more to be continued and following up on is that, oh no, I guess there's a couple other quick things, but the main thing to be continued is to see what I'm able to achieve with a slight scale up of the cooling water in metal bowls. I'll be able to do that with more water and more power, and we'll see how scalable it is and whether or not it works at all or noticeably at all to do any kind of cooling of the ambient temperature in addition to the spot treating. So we'll see how that goes. That'll be the next phase. A couple of other factors that I have worked out, and I was almost dead set on giving up on this project after last summer because I almost died, and it's no joke. And I've talked about it. I suffered a very, very life-threatening injury, and barely, it took away my ability to stand, took away my ability to walk. I was debilitated for 2 months, and it was the most, I was also losing nutrients and having early signs of scurvy. It was the kind of thing that would force you to tap out of a reality survival show, but I was able to make it through with, I would say, some clever designs on my next supply run. And silver lining was that my choices for how to optimize my diet after that and be knowing I'd pushed the limits too far, and then realizing I had to be a little more consumptive, if you will, of certain micronutrients in order to do okay and to heal. Now I'm on a track where we'll see how well it holds up in the summer, but it's done great for me so far over the cooler months. That'll be another thing that I'll be reporting on, is whether or not my enhanced dietary strategy that I use to heal myself from a life-threatening injury, that if that strategy holds up very well in the heat, or if I'm again crushed by it and risking all kinds of injury from it. We'll just have to see. But last couple of little strategies that I evolved after. So yeah, I decided I was pretty much dead set on giving up on this place and either making it a seasonal, going through the process. Once the temperatures cool a little bit, I said, I've got to make it so I'm psychologically and logistically prepared to leave here in an emergency, or to just scale out of here and say, you know what, it doesn't make sense to, whatever I have to suffer and endure out there in the world, I've got to find cooler temperatures. I'm going to be a climate refugee from my own land. I did my best. I made it 3 years, but it's cutting it too close with almost dying again. So I would be a fool to stay here another summer. And I had made all the, as soon as I could walk again, as soon as it was cool enough to do anything again, all I did for several months was just completely reorganize everything here, which isn't much, but just in the heat. And even if it's cooler heat, it still slows you down quite a bit. But it took a long time to get things sorted, to get things secured, so that I could feel comfortable leaving indefinitely if I had to, and not leave a mess, not leave hazards, and not leave anything I wouldn't care to have stolen. So after all of that, to now I'm in a position where I'm far more ready to bug out. Everything that I need, if I were to want to evacuate for a short or long duration period of time, is staged, if not already packed to go. And there's a few options around that. But anyway, it took a while to get to that point. But it's funny because almost as soon as I got to the point of being totally ready to leave, I decided and I realized, you know what, it's good that I have that done. That needed to happen. There's no universe where that wasn't the right intelligent thing to do, to have one, you know, both. If I'm going to have both feet in here, I better have 1 foot sort of leaning, ready to get out of here, and not be, I got to be leaning out of this place if I'm going to be here full time, not leaning into it. Because if I had to extract myself, I think about, there's no way, it took me so long to do all that, there's no way I could do that in a hurry. It would be a you know what show, and a you know what, and a cluster you know what. And so I'm glad that's done. I did it when it was cool. I don't have to do it when it's hot. I wouldn't be able to do it when it's hot. But it's almost as soon as I got to that point, I realized, you know what, there's a couple of dimensions of things I've been, ways I've been suffering here and enduring that I could optimize and I could transform, and it might drop the temperature down 5 to 10 degrees. I was hinting at that earlier. So this is the kind of grand finale, is to talk about what those strategies may be. The temporarily paused, I don't want to say failed, but the temporarily paused earth tube dome project. I took the dome at the end of that run of underground pipe, and I said, if I can't cool this, I'm going to move it closer to me, which it was sad because I had to basically nullify a lot of work I did to get that established where it was. But if I dismantled it to a degree, I could drag it back and I could bring it closer to base camp. And because I realized too, even that distance of that 100, 150 feet that it was out there, I don't want to be staggering around in the summer with scorpions and red ants everywhere and then risk twisting an ankle, and then I would really be dead. No, there's no question about it. And if depending on my state, I may or may not be able to crawl back before within however many minutes I would be literally dying in the heat. So it made sense for me to pull that dome back in closer. Now that I have it closer, I realized, okay, you know what this can actually do? This can be, for the first summer, it'll be the fourth summer, and for the first one of those four summers, this dome could give me the ability to actually stand up and have that dimension of sanity make it so if I have the dome and I put shade cloth over it, that's priceless real estate to have any kind of shade out here. The only way I've had shade out here previously is that I have a tin roof on one truck and a bamboo roof on the other, and that gives me my bedroom, my pantry, my bathroom. That's what that is. Okay, and then so shaded. But both of them are such that I cannot stand up within them. So I'm trapped for all those months without the ability to do any kind of even minimalist calisthenics. I can do some very minimal moving around, but again, I said, I don't like to hike around in the heat. Anything could happen. I would not be able. Even if I could physically, mechanically crawl back, depending on the time of day that happened, I may not make it back in time. So I don't venture off. The cool months, I have the freedom to really roam and do projects and do work all around the property. But when it gets to the heat, I've got to stay tight into base camp and not venture off at all. So bringing that dome all the way back in gives me now, for the first time, I have this potential to have a shaded area where I can stand up in. So, and I realized that not having a shaded area where I could hang out in at all. One of the Truckstead sort of setups is far less ventilated. It's still extremely ventilated, but it is sort of walled enough to where it just bakes me like a potato. And of course the corrugated metal roof conducts the heat, and I'm literally broiling myself, and I've realized, you know, I've just got to have a policy where I can only be in the broiler when the sun is down. When the sun is up, I can't hang out here. And I had been adding at least 10 degrees of heat to myself and by blocking the breeze, which is just the most foolish thing. Why, maybe I don't even need to burn that energy on the fans if I can be outside. And so I'm dying to know now, or I'm living to know now. I cannot wait to find out if I was exposing myself to a minimum 10 degrees higher temperatures than necessary by being in a more enclosed space, because of the fact that that's where my bedding is, and that's where I have shade. But I have, it's like the most absurd, foolish irony that the most comfortable place is the most uncomfortable place. Now, I thought I was supposed to be smarter than that as a permaculture designer. I'm supposed to understand some of these things. So now I'm furnishing myself to be able to spend the hottest times of the day of the hottest times of the year in a well-shaded, hyperventilated, raised dome above the ground, where these are 5-foot domes. I've got two of them. One of them's for the garden that I slip into like a ninja because I can't stand up in it, and I made a little door in the wire mesh that I use to keep the critters out of the garden. I have to slide through that because I didn't have the materials to lift it up even if I wanted to. Luckily, scavenging and harvesting salvaged lumber from the ghost towns in the wasteland, I did that this winter, and I resupplied a whole bunch of very dilapidated and almost barely usable 2x4s, but I got enough of them to be able to create an elegant system to elevate one of the 5-foot domes by 2 feet above the ground, anchoring the 2x4s with a sort of cross piece underground. So it's like an inverted T shape, the letter T, and they're anchored in 12 inches of underground 2x4 with a little cross piece at the bottom as an anchor, like a foot that locks it in under the sand, and then 2 feet exactly above the sand, which gives me a level sort of platform to fasten and attach the dome to, so the dome is secured. It can have the canopy on it without blowing away, and it's 2 feet raised up. So what does that give me? That gives me the ability to stand. So I can move my lymph, I can stretch, I can do yoga, I can do martial arts, and I can really have a meditation environment where I can do Tai Chi, I can do movement, and I can probably avoid a lot of the atrophy and sickness and sort of degradation that was leading to my demise over these last 3 years of being, like, when I say I've got to be laid up in the heat, maybe that was just something that I adapted to and took for granted, but just wasn't thinking out of the box, literally. So now I'm thinking out of the box, I'm thinking into the dome, and that wasn't possible before because it was just a sort of incomplete project that I abandoned. But bringing that dome closer in, now I'm excited, I'm hopeful, and I'm thinking that it's not going to be cool, but the cooling that I do, I mean, if I can drop the temperature of the blood with the cool rags, and I can have way more airflow in the shade, and standing up isn't going to make me cool, but it's going to allow me to have a little bit of movement to where I've just got more optimized circulation, more optimized lymph flow, more optimized sort of spiritual, energetic kind of factors, and just and even a better view. So all the elements of resilience, the morale, the spirits, the psychological, the physical, the chemical, all these factors are going to be, I think, not exponentially, but at least maybe another several. How? Yeah, I mean, you can't really measure, but the on a scale of 1 to 10 of suboptimal to optimal, I think I'm gonna, yeah, on that scale, I think I may be able to raise the summer desert survival up a couple notches of optimization, and that's gonna be a big deal. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. And if I discover, which, you know, I'm not going to bet the farm on it, but I am kind of hopeful that if I discover that what I thought was just the most insane trade-off to live out here during the summer, if I discover that it's tolerable and biologically even the slightest bit safer to be out here because I made that design modification of introducing those dimensions for surviving the summer that are going to be both psychologically and physically medically optimized, and just the slightest bit more, And that tips the scales for me to say, I get to stay here. I want to stay. I've wanted to stay here. I'm not being forced out of my position. I'm not giving up. And I can do it in a way that's safer than it has been this whole time. And I can have more confidence. And that just validates and really compounds the value of all of the work I've done and all of the, I mean, I could say, well, I learned the lessons I needed to learn. The main lesson was, this is impossible. You know, I don't want to give up on it. This is a mission impossible. I want to make it through. I want to get to a point where, I mean, if I can make it out here and start to get to the event horizon point that I'm hoping for, which is that no more plastic, no more imports, growing my own food, capturing my own rainwater, and then phasing the plastics out of that process. And then eventually getting to a point where I go, no, unless the temperature of the planet, surface of the planet doubles, I can live so happily and so ridiculously comfortably in the cool months, sinfully, blissfully luxuriating in the comfort of the cool months. And then I said to a friend, maybe the cost of heaven, maybe the cost or 3 months of hell is the cost of 9 months of heaven, or make that 4 and 8 if you want. But that's the deal that I'm in. If I can mitigate hell, heaven's always going to be worth it. I do not want to leave those 8, 9 months of heaven in this paradise of a place that I have. I really don't want to leave it. I can capture rain, and I can have my own ponds, lakes, and my own ocean out here if I want, at a bonsai scale, and I'm perfectly okay with that, perfectly happy with that. That biggest thing to be happy about is less people, less problems. I can create an ecosystem that's a scale model of the earth with my bonsai food forest and my ponds and my rainwater catchment systems and tankage and everything. I can grow an oasis. I can grow trees. I can live everything I've ever wanted to live in the name of permaculture out here, if I can just affordably optimize the cooling situation. And if the last thing that I mean, a few more solar panels, a few more batteries is all it would take for me to probably get, well, I already have the misting system. I could even make a misting system out of metal, if that would even be more ideal. So it's possible for me to have the only remaining crutch on surviving out here be toxic batteries and toxic solar panels. And that would be my only compromise at a certain point. It's like, I will get to a point where I say no more, nothing else will be imported to this land with any toxic petroleum-based or otherwise legacy, only natural, organic, biodegradable materials. And the only cheat, or the only compromise from that standard would be, except for the solar powered system. And then maybe we'll get lucky. There's been more rain this year so far already this year, 2024. It's been cooler temperatures that are really blowing my mind. I can't believe how forgiving the temperatures have been. And apparently there's crazy storms of very freezing temperatures throughout the country right now. I seem to get the sort of the crumbs of the extreme temperatures. I got the crumbs of the rain, but I get all the heat, that's for sure. There's no way around that. But yeah, I guess the point being, ideally, I mean, somewhere, even if it's not here, ideally somewhere, someday in the future, I will be living a life where there is no, where I'm not responsible for importing anything toxic onto the site. I have been responsible for importing plastics onto this site as prosthesis, the scaffolding for where I want to go, but I'll have to take responsibility to have it hauled out of here, or to haul it out myself. I mean, that's, and I don't have trash service to make it easy to, you know, to have out of sight, out of mind. Because as I've learned before, there is no away. You cannot throw things away because there is no away. And here that piles up fast. So
So yeah, I want to be done with importing toxic materials. I want to be done with importing in general, but if I have to import anything, it's going to be all natural, biodegradable, compostable materials. And then eventually I want to let go of, can't throw it away, but I can get it out of sight, out of mind, and make it someone else's problem. The solar panel afterlife processes, the battery afterlife processes that I won't be, I'm not going to be disassembling solar panels and batteries and trying to find some way to recycle the materials or to properly dispose of them on my site. That has to involve the outside world. Another dimension of interaction I want to minimize and then dissolve to nothing at some point. So my work's cut out for me. Wish me luck. I've got a couple more months to do what I've been doing, scurrying around and sort of optimizing different things, getting ready for, you know, it's almost like preparing your home to have someone disabled live there. That's what I'm doing now for myself for the summer. I've gotten spoiled by the cool temperatures where I've been ambulant and mobile and able to move around and do a lot of things. But that's going to start to really narrow and shrink down to almost nothing very soon. So what do I got to do while I can do it to optimize for my safety when I get into that debilitated zone? And hopefully, yeah, what I've done so far that's worked will keep working. What I'm doing to enhance that and to evolve it will work even better. And next time I talk about this topic, I will be in a place of extreme happiness, knowing that some of these calculations are actually correct and they're going to pay off and they're going to make everything right. So wish me luck, and I hope you're doing well and whether a climate refugee or someone who has a higher power bill to do your climate control indoors, hopefully you're doing what you got to do and you can afford the time, energy, and resources to optimize your relationship with the sun so you don't feel like you're doing what I'm doing and what a lot of people on earth are doing, which is staring down the barrel of the sun. Cheers.